You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leeds, talking American League East with MLB.com's AL East beat reporters. We'll be talking about Edwin Encarnacion, Michael Saunders in the bullpen. We talk Toronto Blue Jays with Gregor Chisholm. Be digging a little deeper into the Matt Wieter situation and also talking about Chris Davis and some of the top prospects with Brittany Giroli, talking Orioles. Talking Red Sox with Ian Brown, taking a look at Ruznay Castillo's health, Alan Craig's opportunities, and whether Dustin Pedroia can have a nice bounce-back year. With Bill Chastain, I'll be talking Rays and looking at the situation with Alex Cobb and all the potential consequences and ramifications there. And talking with Brian Hoke about the Yankees, looking at CC Sabathia, Andrew Bailey, and the fifth starter competition. Talking Baltimore Orioles with MLB.com's Orioles beat reporter Brittany Giroli. So after a very encouraging return to catching, Matt Wieter's got a little bit of bad news almost right after it. He's going to be shut down for a little while from catching. Where exactly does that leave Wieters, and where do the Orioles go from here?
In actual Grapefruit League play, they've got about 2.5 weeks to go, so it's going to be an issue. Can he get back on the field catching, and can he build up enough innings for them to feel okay with him being behind the plate for opening day? Now, manager Buck Showalter said they probably would not take Wieters on the opening day roster if he can't at least be an option at catcher. So it could definitely change what they do with the roster, who makes the club, and really the construction of things for at least the first few games if Matt Wieters isn't ready to go.
We talked about Evan Cabrera when they brought him in, and I was struck by the idea of using him in the outfield. I know he's got speed, and so there's something to that, but this guy who's an awfully good defensive infielder, what's the thought process there?
Well, the thought process is how can he help this team? How can he fit in for the Orioles? And when you look at who they have, Jonathan Schoop, Brian Flaherty, they've got guys who are able to move around in the infield. Now, Cabrera has almost exclusively played shortstop at the major league level. The Orioles have J.J. Hardy. Pretty good shortstop, probably not going anywhere. So, you know, they've had Cabrera take a lot of reps at second base. They haven't had him in the outfield yet. Buck plans on doing that more the second half of camp here, so expected in the coming weeks. But they're just looking for him to be versatile. If he's going to make this club, he's probably going to make this club as a utility guy who can add some speed off the bench. So being able to play the corner outfield spot, being able to hold his own, would certainly help benefit the Orioles. Buck likes having guys that he can work in and out of the lineup. Cabrera, though right now, to me, it looks like he'd probably be slotted at AAA to start the season. He presents a guy who is versatile, adds that speed component to the team.
And that does actually, you sort of answer my next question, is what are his chances of breaking camp with the big club?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance. You never know about injuries and what the next, you know, 3.5 weeks or so is going to entail. But, you know, he hasn't been all that impressive. He's gotten picked off. He's gotten caught stealing, I believe it was twice. Offensively, he's been okay. He's gotten a little more comfortable lately. But you can't really make the case that Ryan Flaherty and Jonathan Schoop haven't outperformed him in camp. And part of the reason they signed him was because they were going to be able to sign him with a minor league option. So I think if camp were to break today, again, there's a lot more to come still, but he would probably start to keep that AAA Norfolk.
I preface with already the second time in 10 minutes that I'm scouting stats here, and there's nothing worse than scouting the stats when you're trying to do analysis. With that said, there's an awful lot to like in Chris Davis's batting line this spring. Despite the .230 batting average, he's not striking out a ton. He's drawing walks. He's hit three balls out of the park. How do his at-bats look? Does he look like a guy who is taking good at-bats and maybe giving some encouraging signs?
Yeah, he is, and you mentioned it with the spring stats. It's hard to tell, and it really is. But, you know, he seems comfortable. He seems relaxed. I think the fact that he's been working some deep counts has certainly helped. He seems to be really a guy who thinks that he has to prove himself again this spring. And I think there are guys who respond differently to different situations. I think Davis feels like he's been written off from last year, and it's almost like two springs ago when he was going to be the Orioles starting first baseman and had yet to really cement himself in the major leagues. He feels like he has to prove himself again, and to him, that's a good thing. I think there are certain guys who don't like that scenario. Davis, I believe, thrives in it. I think he's going to have a good year for them. Now, obviously, he's still got that one-game suspension opening day, which could really mess with what they do with the roster for at least one game. but I do like the way he's looking at the plate. Defensively, he's always been a good defensive player, and he's also a guy who they've been trying in right field a lot this spring. So there are certainly options where Steve Pierce could play first base, Chris Davis could play right field. To keep both of them fresh, to keep them engaged and in the game, they're going to do that a lot during the season as well.
To keep bouncing around here, the O's just recently sent down their number one, two, and three prospects. What did you see from those guys in camp, and what might be ETAs for Harvey, for Bundy, and for Walker?
Well, I think, you know, with Harvey and Bundy, it's just a matter of getting them some innings. They needed to get out of camp. They got to get some of these other guys stretched out, and they want to keep those guys on the schedule. Now, Hunter Harvey, some believe in the organization that he's a little ahead of Dylan Bundy. And, you know, a lot of that could change depending on what happens during the minor league season. But they really felt like Hunter Harvey was very composed. He was very confident. He fit in very well in his first big league spring training. Bundy, it's hard to believe, will be out of options after this year. So this is a big year for him to prove himself. Both of them I expect to see sometime in an Orioles uniform. Now, whether that's during the season or not until the September call-up, depends on how they're pitching, depends on the need of the team. But they are both not very far away from helping this big league club. And I think watching them again this spring helped the Orioles feel good about where they're at pitching depth-wise. Now, Walker is a guy that they feel like needs to put it together a little bit more at the major league level. He was up a little bit last year. They got to see him. But he's a guy who consistently just needs to put it together offensively and defensively. They like his bat. They feel like his glove could improve a little bit. He needs to get a little bit better with range. They're such a defensive-heavy club. Buck has really implemented that since he got here, that if you can't defend, if you're going to cost them out, you're not going to be up with the Orioles. So that's really the main thing to watch with a guy like Christopher Walker.
Does he have any opportunity to play anywhere besides first base? Because that first base DH spot seems fairly clogged.
Yeah, that's the other issue, too, with him. Is I don't know defensively if they'd want to try him anywhere else, but I don't know if he'd be built to be anywhere else either. I haven't heard anything that would suggest he's going anywhere else. And like you said, the first base DH slot is clogged. I mean, you've got a ton of guys there. They're going to work Pearson. They have Chris Davis. They've got a lot of guys who they feel like can get the job done. Now, maybe in another year or two, they could figure out a way to get Walker in there. But right now, I haven't heard anything about him switching positions.
And you had an interesting piece a few days ago about the Orioles talking to their players about analytics. And the main thing you focused on was just sort of them understanding what's good and what's bad in particular numbers. But I was really interested in that. What are they trying to accomplish? What does the club hope to gain from having these presentations and talking to these guys about analytics?
Oh, I think Buck just wants them to not be afraid of it. So he kind of called it sabermetrics for dummies. Bullpen coach Tom Cheedy is going to talk to the team in the next day or two, I think, about it. And they just want them to embrace the different statistics that they're using to evaluate players. And I think that there seems to be, in baseball, a divided camp between people who are sabermetric people and people who are old-school baseball people. And Buck's just trying to bridge that gap. He wants these guys to understand what a good WOBA is and things like that, what WAR means, what's a good WAR, what's a bad WAR. He just wants these guys to understand that a little bit more. And he felt like having Dom Cheadle, having a guy who's not a sabermetric guy, so to speak, give this talk would help hopefully bridge that gap.
I guess what I wonder about, take it a step further, and they may not be going there, what really intrigues me is there's some of the stuff that can really help a player. I mean, you look at things like the whole concept of fielding independent pitching, batting average on balls in play, ground ball rate, the kinds of things where pitchers maybe could understand better that sometimes you just can't control your giving up singles, control the things you can. Is there any of that kind of stuff, or is it really sort of just an intro right now?
I think it's just an intro. I don't know how deep they're going to get into things. I think Buck just wants to expose them to as much as he can. And I agree, it could definitely help the players, but I don't know how specific they're going to get into this. This could be the first meeting of several. I don't know. But all I know is they're going to try to get these guys to at least have a fundamental understanding of what's going on with some of these stats.
All right. Well, Brittany Giroli, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking New York Yankees with MLB.com's Yankees beat reporter Brian Hoke. Ryan, Yankees got a little bit of bad news here recently regarding Jacoby Ellsbury. At this point, it doesn't sound like it's anything too severe, but I think if you cover ball long enough, you know that obliques tend to be really tricky. What are they saying about Ellsbury right now?
Yeah, that's the thing. The red flag went up in my mind when Girardi said it was mild oblique strain. And thinking back, and as you said, one of the other favorite Girardi-isms is that obliques can be tricky. And, you know, you've seen it time and time again. It could be a week for Ellsbury, but you know that any kind of small movement could set that back even more. So this is kind of a similar situation to what happened last year with Ellsbury. It wasn't an oblique, but late in camp, he suffered an injury. I believe it was to his calf. Did not play in another exhibition game, but then eventually turned out to be ready for opening day. So I think that that's probably the best-case scenario that the Yankees are looking at here. It's possible that maybe he doesn't play in another exhibition game, but as he proved last year, maybe you don't need to play in those last 2 weeks of games. He can get on the field for opening day and be ready to go. So I think that right now with the Yankees, you're looking toward April 6th for Ellsbury. Maybe you can get him in some games April 4, 5, you work out there. But really, with an oblique injury, the most important thing to do right now is rest it. They've already said that he's going to be down for 7 days without baseball activities, and then you're working back up, and you know how they like to go with things step by step. So I think that right now I wouldn't rule him out for opening day, but if you've got spring training tickets for March 27, you're probably not going to see Jacoby Ellsbury.
What's the plan B in the meantime? Who gets those at-bats? Who maybe gets an opportunity to show something that maybe they wouldn't have gotten previously?
Yeah, you know, one of the guys who has been in camp is Ramon Flores. They're talking about him a lot. You know, the Yankees believe that he could be a fourth outfielder in the big leagues right now if they had a need for it. They re-signed Chris Young to a contract, and Young's probably going to be on the roster, but this is going to give an opportunity to a bunch of guys. Girardi even said that he might take a look at Jose Perella in center field. You know, in the worst-case scenario, you can always move Brett Gardner from left field over to center field, and Gardner's kind of a true center fielder anyway with his plus range. So I don't worry about if Ellsbury was not active. I don't think you'd be seeing balls drop in and, you know, guys not able to track down balls in center field because Gardner can do it and Chris Young can do it. So I think they're covered there. But, yeah, I think certain guys who are kind of on the bubble here, like Flores, like I talked about, and Perella, who's trying to make the team his utility man, they could get some added reps as a result of this injury.
On the pitching side, guys are coming along, it seems. CC Sabathia made his first start, and the results weren't great, but it seemed like he's been doing this long enough. He's not going to worry about two innings in March. But is everything coming along pretty well with Sabathia as he moves forward?
Yeah, so far so good. And, you know, I feel like that's the case with a lot of the pitchers. You're saying that a lot with Tanaka, for example. But in Sabathia's case, the fact that he's able to go out there and throw at a decent velocity, you're never going to see 97-mile-an-hour CC again. That guy is gone. And you're in the back nine of this contract here. CC's goal right now is to be a competent big league starter, I think, and to take the ball regularly every fifth day and go out there and give his team innings and starts. I don't think anybody has any illusions about CC winning another Cy Young Award or winning 20 games. I'm sure CC would love to, but I think that at this point you're looking for an innings eater, a middle of rotation guy. That's probably what he is. He's a leader in the clubhouse, and if he can take the ball every fifth day and give solid outings, handing off to that dominant bullpen, I mean, that's one of the big reasons that you've seen the Yankees load up on bullpen arms. They're trying to replicate what Kansas City did last year. So I think it lowers the demand on what you need from a guy like Sabathia. Merely, if he can give you five or six good innings during the season sometime in June or July, then you hand it off to the bullpen and get those final outs, or the final nine, maybe even 12 outs from the bullpen, the Yankees can make that work. So I think that's the formula you're looking for with Sabathia right now.
If I'm doing the math right, it looks like he should probably get three more starts this spring, maybe three in a sim game or an exhibition or something in addition to three Grapefruit League starts. Does he sort of progress more or less normally from here, three or four next time out, four or five time after that, or is there anything kind of funky about how he goes forward from here?
As long as the knee holds up, I think that that's what you can look at. You can look at adding an inning and 15 to 20 pitches every single outing, and You know, the Yankees have been pretty clear about the fact that they came in with Sabathia a little bit on a delayed program. He didn't take the ball until recently, but I think that they think there's going to be plenty of time for him to be ready for opening day. Whether or not he starts on opening day, that remains to be seen. You know, he's done it every single year since he's been a Yankee. This could be the year where you can make a legitimate case that maybe it should not be him on opening day. Maybe he is not the ace of the staff anymore. Maybe Tanaka is the best pitcher on the staff. Hey, you could even make a case that Michael Pineda takes the opening day start. But I think that's premature at this point. Really, the goal is to have him ready and on the active roster and in the rotation on April 6th.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, as you were just sort of cautioning against, but it also seems like might even be an opportunity, as I sort of hinted at, right around then, get him a sim game, get him one more get ready rep, and then have him start at the end of the first week. Is that something that might make some sense for them?
It might make sense. I think everything's kind of flexible right now. You know, you're almost waiting for the other shoe to drop. Girardi said that he's not sitting on the edge of the dugout bench every time a guy like Tanaka takes the ball, for example. But he said it would be a long season if he did that. But I think you need to wait and see how this is all going to play out. You've got a lot of variables here. So to plot it out here in the middle of March and say this is absolutely how it's going to be in April, a lot can change between now and then. So I think you're trying to get all these guys to the wire when the bell rings and have them healthy and ready to go. And look, you already saw that Chris Capiano went down and everybody was penciling him in as a fifth starter. Things can happen. Weird, funky things can happen. You know, a guy can break the cover first base and suddenly you don't see him until May or June. So I think you just wait and see how it plays out. But as of right now, all systems go for the Yankees other than Capuano in the rotation, and they'll continue going on with that.
Andrew Bailey just recently made his Grapefruit League debut and his first time pitching in anger in an awfully long time. This is a guy who was a very good reliever not all that long ago. What do they think they have in him? Is he a guy that they think might be kind of a pleasant surprise?
They hope so. And believe it or not, he's probably the only guy in this in that bullpen with a lot of closing experience. So I think that he's going to be a week or two behind the other guys. He just got into a game now. So you're not really looking to him for April 6th to be in that bullpen. He'll probably begin the year at Scranton. But that's a big step up after last year for him. He spent the whole year down here in Tampa on the backfields and was rehabbing and almost got into minor league games, but then had a setback. So I think that this is a deal where the Yankees were looking at him. If he provided some kind of benefit in 2014, that would have been great, but they're really looking at it for 15. And I think that Bailey is a guy who you could see in the Bronx at some point. Look, he had a lot of success. He was an all-star with the A's. He pitched well with the Red Sox, then the injury came on. I think that you're looking at him as a guy who can come up and not necessarily be the closer. They have that covered with Dellin Betances and Andrew Miller, but if you can have a guy with that kind of experience come into the bullpen and handle big outs in the sixth or seventh innings and maybe even the eighth, why not? So I think that, as I said before, one of the things the Yankees have made a conscious effort to is to load up and replicate or try to what Kansas City did last year. They know that offense is down around the league. Pitching is the king. Pitching is king. Pitching is key. So they think that if they can get five, six good innings out of their starters and hand it off to the bullpen, they can win a lot of games.
You mentioned the Capuano injury and that kind of opening a door. Couple of guys have at least put up very good numbers who might be contending for that. Esmiel Rogers, who is a really interesting guy, who's been very good at times and very bad at times, and Adam Warren, both, you know, again, scouting the stats is just the worst thing you can do, and I'm looking at a stat line from a few hundred miles away, but the numbers look good on those guys. Is there a favorite? Are those guys both impressing? Where does that kind of stand right now?
Well, they're both impressing. The Yankees have talked a lot about Rogers. In Rogers' case, they have him working with pitching coach Larry Rothschild. He's cleaned up his mechanics a little bit. They think the delivery is crisper. And one thing that Joe Girardi keeps going back to is that Rogers is a converted position player. So if you're looking at his development and looking at the numbers and some of the wildness there, you can come up with an excuse and say that he's still trying to iron things out and trying to figure things out. I mean, they've loved the arm for a long time. Obviously, the numbers in Toronto last year were not good. He was a waiver claim. He pitched a little bit for the Yankees in the second half and was kind of a swingman role. I think he made one start for them, but it was mostly out of the bullpen. I think that with Rodgers, you're betting on the stuff. He's got the live arm. He could pitch out of the bullpen, but they want to see if he can be a rotation guy for them. They're tantalized by guys with big stuff like that and strikeout ability. In Warren's case, he would like to start. I think if you ask most guys in the bullpen, they would love to have the opportunity to start. But with Warren, it may kind of work against him that he was able to have success. All but one of his months in the bullpen last year were very good for the Yankees. So they know he could do it. They know that they could shuttle him back to the bullpen if they had to. He's an option there to be their fifth starter, pitch out of the back end of that rotation. But they know that if they did wind up putting him in the bullpen, they would get competent results and good outs from him.
All right. Well, Brian Hoke, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Toronto Blue Jays with MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm. Gregor, things have quieted down a little bit after last week's frenzy, but there's still a lot of guys dealing with some injuries around the Blue Jays, and I feel like we may spend the next 10 minutes just sort of rounding all of that up, but it seems like maybe the biggest deal is Edwin Encarnacion. What exactly is going on with him?
Yeah, it's you know, it's a situation where I think the goal of every spring training is to come out of camp healthy, and that's certainly not going to be the case with the Blue Jays. They do hope that Edwin Encarnacion over the next couple weeks gets back to full strength. He's got a sore back, some inflammation down there. The MRI didn't reveal anything, but the back issue has been a concern for him over the past couple of years, so the fact that it has popped up this early certainly isn't encouraging. He's supposed to get into games probably by next week. He's kind of proceeded to hit off tees so far. He's going to take batting practice over the weekend. So everything points in the right direction for him, but the repercussions of this really means that the Blue Jays probably aren't going to be able to play him as many games at first base as they originally hoped. I mean, that's something that's really going to have to be monitored all year. Even if he gets back to full strength by opening day, it's something where they're going to have to just ease his workload in the field because they don't want something like that to pop up. So it has repercussions for the DH spot with Deion Navarro, and it also has repercussions for the first base competition with guys like Justin Smoke and Derek Barton.
As you sort of lead into what my next question was, which is kind of what is Plan B? I mean, he's not really a guy you can just replace out of the organization. So what do they do if they do have Encarnacion less than they would like to?
Yeah, it's certainly not an ideal situation because, you know, the Blue Jays came into camp really kind of taking a close eye at Barton and Smoke, and the hope was that one of those two guys would really kind of seize the role and become that either backup first baseman or a solid platoon partner with Edwin Encarnacion. And while both of those guys have great gloves and they've flashed that already, neither one of them has done much with the bat. So neither guy has really seized the opportunity so far. So this one's still probably going to go down to the wire. It's not something the Blue Jays are probably going to decide for another couple weeks. If nothing changes, I would expect it to be Smoke. But if Barton starts hitting the ball, the job is there for him as well. The one benefit to both of those guys is the glove that they do bring, especially because Josh Donaldson can occasionally get erratic with his throwing arm. Same could be said for Jose Reyes. So having the glove over at first base is really a big benefit. Both of those guys are better fielders than Encarnacion. But the question is whether or not they're going to get enough offense from that position in order to justify that glove.
Now, on the opposite side, it does seem like things are encouraging with Michael Saunders. Is that an accurate way to look at it? The things are coming along pretty well, considering how bad the news seemed at first?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's someone who kind of continues to defy expectations in terms of his timeline. He's supposed to get into a minor league game on Thursday. He's just going to DH. He's not going to run the bases, so he's going to hit, and then someone else will run for him. But the fact that he's swinging already and seeing live pitching is a big bonus because that was really the biggest challenge for him. Once it was kind of deemed that he should be ready physically around that time, he needs to get his timing down at the plate. So the fact that he's kind of already facing the live pitching should help him get ready for the start of the season. In terms of the knee, everything's progressing as really even better than the Blue Jays had hoped. He should start running relatively soon. He should start fielding relatively soon. And that's the type of thing that once he does kind of get clearance for that, those are the type of things that can move along pretty quickly. So it's looking more and more likely that he'll be ready for opening day. I think at the very latest, you're probably going to see him back for the home opener 1 week into the season. But it looks like the hope is that on April 6th, he'll be ready to go.
Given the number of guys with sort of issues on the offense. I mean, you know, I know Pilar's not expected to be a big part of it, but he's dealing with something. They lose Ramon Santiago. What's this kind of overall level of concern about the lineup, given that that's really going to be the calling card of this club? If they're going to win, it's going to be because they score a lot of runs.
Yeah, definitely. And there is concern. There's no question about it. But as of right now, they think they're going to get most of these guys back just in time. They're still hoping for Pilar on opening day. Ramon Santiago really did seem like he was going to seize that backup infielder spot. He's gone for 2.5 months, so he's eliminated from that competition. But he wasn't expected to be a big piece. He was probably going to platoon a little bit with Asturias. But the main guys, Encarnacion, Saunders, even Pilar, who should get some time in center with Belton Pompey as well, probably start against lefties. Those guys are probably going to be back. So the only real major blow this spring has been Marcus Stroman, and there's obviously no replacing him. But I think the hope is that they can get everybody back. So they've potentially dodged some obstacles along the way, but the fact that there are this many question marks 2 weeks before opening day is certainly a concern. I think everybody's kind of holding their breath a little bit that they can get back to full strength over this time.
Now, they brought in a guy who is kind of intriguing, and I don't know how exactly he fits. To some extent, he's similar to some guys they already have, but how does Dion Vicieto fit in with all of this?
Yeah, that's a big question mark, too. I think a lot of that depends on what happens at first base. They're giving him a bit of a look at first. Defensively, he's not going to give you a whole heck of a lot, but the bat is much, much better than Smoke and Barton. So if those guys continue to struggle, they'll audition him. They're still trying to see if Danny Valencia can handle that defensively. The one thing I don't think you're going to see very much is Vicieto play the outfield like he did with the White Sox. That really seems, as long as Pilar is healthy by opening day, that fourth outfielder spot should probably belong to him. The Jays are looking at Vicieto more for the bat, and he does have a lot of upside, but if everybody is healthy by opening day, I have a hard time seeing how he fits on this roster. Simply because the Blue Jays keep saying that they're going to put an emphasis on defense after fielding has been such a big issue for this team over the past couple of years.
And he doesn't seem like a guy who's going to go to AAA. I mean, if he's not on the roster, he probably gets waived or released or something, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, exactly. And he's got an agreement with Alex Anthopoulos that if he doesn't make the opening day roster, that he can look elsewhere. There is a chance that the Blue Jays could talk him into delaying that for, you know, 2-3 weeks into the season just to see where things stand, especially if they think some of their guys have question marks, if there's any chance at all that, you know, Encarnacion's not going to be ready or he might need a little bit more time, or if they, you know, they're a little concerned and think that maybe a week into the season he's going to have some issues. There's an opportunity there to maybe convince Vicieto to stick around just a little bit, but you're certainly not going to see him in their minor league system with the Jays by the time May rolls around. If he's down there, it'd be very, very short term, just kind of as an insurance policy more than anything else.
And one more injury on the pitching side, a guy they really could not afford to lose on top of the dominoes with Stroman and Sanchez presumably going to the rotation. Brett Cecil's dealing with an issue. What's his current situation?
He's, as we talk here today, Cecil is going to throw his second bullpen session. He's going to be scheduled for a couple more bullpens. The goal is to get him into games by next week. So there's not going to be a lot of opportunity for him to get ready, but there should be just enough. And so he's another one where the Blue Jays are kind of just remaining hopeful that he's going to be able to get enough work in before the start of the regular season to be ready. This is a situation the Blue Jays are very familiar with in terms of their closer's role, because it's essentially the exact same time frame and plan that Casey Jansen worked off the last couple of years. He was dealing with an oblique injury last year. The year before that, it was a sore shoulder. So he was a guy who started the season with basically only having a week or so of a spring training, and it looks like Cecil's kind of on that same plan. But as of right now, he should be ready, and there's no doubt that they desperately need him. They've had some positive storylines down there with top prospects like Miguel Castro, who's really kind of taken the camp by fire. So they overall think that they have a little bit more depth than maybe was originally thought a few weeks ago. But there's no question that Cecil is probably the biggest piece down there, and they need him healthy in order to have some security in those final couple of innings.
And When I look at that, I really wonder as much about just sort of the overall bullpen as the ninth. I mean, this is something we've talked about before, that they wanted to bring in arms. I mean, put aside the ninth and whether somebody steps forward, you take Sanchez out of that, if you're dealing even with Cecil being limited, even if he just can't go as often, how much of a worry is there just about having enough guys to cover the innings when to cover the innings of winning games? I mean, it just at some point, doesn't there become an issue simply of having enough competent bodies to fill a bullpen?
Yeah, there does, and I think a lot of this is really going to come down to putting tons of pressure on a 20-year-old. I mean, the Blue Jays won't stop talking about Castro. I think they're kind of looking at him now. He went from a long shot to making this team at the start of spring training to now being a guy that they're really looking to kind of maybe fill in that hole that Aaron Sanchez is leaving behind with all signs pointing to him joining the starting rotation. They've kind of even put him on the same plan as Sanchez was early on. They're giving him, in New York, the night game this week, he went 2 2/3 innings. They're kind of stretching him out a little bit just to get a little bit more length out of that bullpen. But he's a guy who has zero kind of experience. He's never pitched above Class A, but they love the fact that he hit 99 on the radar gun last night. He really has a really kind of devastating changeup that's got some downward action. They think he's ready. Now, you're putting an awful lot of pressure on a guy who's 20 years old and has such little experience as he does. But he's been probably the biggest positive of the Blue Jays camp so far, and I think they're really going to be looking to him, and they're really going to probably give him some big-time leverage innings at the start of the season and see how he responds.
All right, well, Greg Chisholm, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. I'm talking Tampa Bay Rays with MLB.com's Rays beat reporter Bill Chastain. Bill, the Rays got a little bit of news yesterday that turned into bigger news today, and it's not good news. Alex Cobb is dealing with some elbow tendonitis and will be down for at least through opening day. Tell us a little bit about what exactly he's dealing with and how long a time we're probably looking at.
Well, yesterday he was pitching against the Phillies, and they actually pitched three perfect innings, striking out three, and really looked like he was pitching well, but then he left. And he had actually taken himself out of the game because he had a little bit of tightness in his right forearm, which he said he's kind of been dealing with anyway. But subsequently, that's been checked out, and turns out it's tendonitis in there, so they're going to have to shut him down for, right now they're talking anywhere between 4 and 7 days. They're pretty much set that he will not make his opening day start. But if there is some good news, it's the fact that they feel like it was, there's no structural damage, and they feel like this is just going to be, a minor setback. Of course, we've all seen how these minor setbacks sometimes seem to grow, but for right now, that's what they're saying.
And pardon me, I said elbow. They're calling it forearm right now.
Right.
It's what exactly, in the short term, what's the contingency plan as far as the depth chart, as far as who gets the innings and what they do with the rotation while they're without?
Well, they went into spring training basically one starter down because Matt Moore was still rehabbing from Tommy John, so they had one available spot at that point. But at that point, also the four they had in place were Chris Archer, Jake Odorizzi, Drew Smyly, and Cobb. And now of those four that they thought they were counting on, they have two since Smyly has since been diagnosed with shoulder tendonitis. And actually, one of the guys who was dealing for the, working to win the number five spot, Alex Colome, is still in the hospital with pneumonia. So they've got some guys, from the minor leagues they feel that can help, in the short term. They probably will look to the outside for help, but it won't be necessarily for somebody to help them at the major league roster. It'll be more like to build up their depth at AAA, while some of those AAA guys are pitching in Rays clothing. So, the guys you're going to see in there, Nathan Carnes looks like a lot. He was pretty good. He had a pretty good shot at winning number five. Other guys you might see, Andy Romero, Matt Andrees, Bert Smith, who came over in the Will Myers deal, Tiford, and, so we'll probably start seeing these guys get the innings spread out some. They'll probably be using, the scheduling looks like it's going to be, a huge ordeal now. In fact, Cash kind of managed a chuckle that he's going to leave the scheduling to pitching coach Jim Hickey. Just the logistics of that, getting all these guys stretched out. Another name to throw in there, too, who they were looking at middle relief was Mike Montgomery, and now he could become, stretch him out and become him a starter as well.
You mentioned that if they through anything external, it's likely for minor league depth. But isn't there at least some call, some need, some urgency to be scouring the waiver wire? And this, I mean, this is a time of year when guys are out of options and they become viable pieces. You know, not necessarily a front of the rotation guy, but just somebody who can take some starts and give you the occasional innings. You know, talking to Mark Bowman yesterday about how Wandy Rodriguez might not make the club if he becomes available. That kind of guy, just to be a body and get innings. Is there any notion they might do something like that?
I totally agree. I mean, and that's part of the picture. And when I say minor league guys, you know, it'd be a lot of what you're looking for is those veteran guys you bring in, and you know, maybe not necessarily they win the spot out of spring training, but they give you that depth at the minor league level. I'm sure they're going to be looking at everything available. But, you know, again, as far as anything where you want to mortgage your future, you know, with, you know, by trading for starting pitching or anything like that, right now both of these, you know, Smiley and Cobbs look minor as for the diagnosis right now. And they're hopeful that, you know, both will be back pitching, you know, pretty close to the start of the season.
Could you illuminate Smiley's situation a little more? Because I don't think we've really talked about him much. It must have fallen at a time when we weren't really able to go in any depth. But you know, how long is – what is his time frame? What are we looking at with him as far as time out and time back to sort of full strength?
Well, the Rays are, you know, don't seem to be that alarmed at his progress. Of course, anytime you see a guy, he's got shoulder tendonitis, and, you know, he's been playing catch, but he's not been on a mound. And anyone who covers baseball knows that, you know, getting on the mound is a different animal. It puts more pressure on your joints and shoulders and all those different things. So until we see him, you know, actually take the mound and building up for the season, you know, I'm not quite maybe as optimistic as the Rays are, but, you know, a blow, because definitely he was going to be counted on to be a big part of the rotation. You know, he pitched really well last year. They kind of found something, you know, to tell him, you know, they figured out that he needed to pitch more up in the zone. He was always trying to push the ball down low. And once he started pitching up in the zone, he started having, you know, a lot of success. So they were hoping to build on that this year. And, you know, right now, who knows when that's going to happen.
Excuse me. How big a problem is all of this? I mean, this, you know, if there was one thing that the Rays really felt good about and one reason to say that maybe they could defy some of the more dire predictions about their season this year, it was how strong the rotation was. I mean, at full strength, you make a pretty good case this might be the best rotation in the division. How big a problem is it if they are down nearly their entire rotation, three-fifths of their rotation?
Oh, I think it's a huge crack in their bedrock, basically. And, you know, you combine that with, you know, this is a team that, you know, has questionable offense to begin with, and now you're talking about, you know, being down two of your four guys you were going to count on in your starting rotation. You know, the strain, even if your guys, you know, come in and pitch well, some of these other guys, you know, a lot of these guys, they aren't able to give you more than five innings, you know, and then that starts weighing on the bullpen. And then on top of that, you go down to the bullpen, and they're not having their closer at the start of the year, and Jake McGee, of course, Grant Balfour just got back from Australia, and the reports on him are pretty well. I mean, he has a record as a closer, even though he had some, you know, troubles last year. But, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces right now. And you know, talking to some of the guys today, you know, we were asking if this looks like one of those deals where they're going to have to just dig in and try to hold the fort in April, you know, until the cavalry can come.
Moving to the other side of the ball, because at some point Rays fans aren't going to want to hear about injured starters anymore. You know, we had talked for a good bit about that if there was one thing we knew about the Midland field, it was that Asdrubal Cabrera was the shortstop. You wrote something recently that suggested that maybe that's a little more open than it seems. What is the situation at shortstop right now?
Well, apparently, you know, I was led to believe earlier that he was, you know, it was probably he was going to be the guy, but you know, right now it sounds like Nick Franklin's in play and maybe even Tim Beckham. So the one thing it does sound like they will do with him as a veteran is, you know, let him know whether he's going to be used as a shortstop or a second baseman if they can. But, you know, the way they like to move things around, that might be some, you know, some assurance they might not be able to come through with.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the next question is, what do you do with Cabrera if he's not doing what he signed to do? I mean, he chose
second base.
And would that be all right? Would he be good with that? And is that maybe one of the options there?
Well, he's been pleasant the whole time. He just said he preferred knowing where he's going to be every day. And the Rays have said, you know, we like to try and, you know, make a player feel comfortable and be happy about where he's going to be. But I think you're right. It might be one of those situations where they're just not going to be able to do that.
All right. Well, Bill Chastain, thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras. Talking Boston Red Sox with MLB.com's Red Sox beat reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, we continue to monitor the situation with Ruznay Castillo. It seems like he's coming along. Where is he at right now as far as his recovery from what has turned out to be a little more irritating an injury than people may have hoped at first?
Yeah, man, I think the oblique is just one of those really annoying sort of nagging injuries that, you know, you really can't initiate much of anything. Well, there's still something there because you re-injure it and then you double your recovery time and all that. But the good news is he's finally in the home stretch here. He's going to play in a couple minor league games this week here, and I think by the end of the week you'll see him play in Grapefruit League games, maybe Friday, Saturday, somewhere along there. You know, I do think that it's going to be tough for him to start the season on time just because, look, this guy has 10 years of major league experience. So as John Farrell put it a couple weeks ago, you know, we've never even had a spring training with this guy, so it's hard to sort of know exactly what you're going to get. And, you know, also you have that logjam in the outfield. So I think that, I think he probably, barring a trade of somebody else, I think he probably starts the year in AAA no matter what his health looks like.
Does it sort of become a path of least resistance thing? I mean, that it almost offers them an opportunity to do the easy thing?
Yeah, exactly. I think that this injury, they would have had a very difficult decision if all things were equal at the beginning of camp and Mookie Betts and Ruznay had the same number of at-bats, and, you know, Shane Victorino kind of makes it through healthy the whole camp. And I think it would have been hard for them. But now Ruznay Castillo really hasn't had a spring training. And, you know, even if he starts playing in games at the end of this week, it's going to be sort of an abbreviated one. So I think they'll at least take a week or two at the beginning of the season, extend his spring training a little bit, and just let him get a little more comfortable, let him get in a little bit more of a baseball routine.
I'm going to do something I hate doing here, which is scouting the stats, but it's for a personal favorite, so I'm going to forgive myself for it. My man, the wrench, Alan Craig, has a very nice stat line down there, hitting .290, hitting for a couple extra base hits. Is there a chance for him to play his way into a bigger opportunity than we have been thinking for weeks is there? Is there a chance for him, if he continues to hit, to force his way into some kind of bigger role than kind of being lost, as it has appeared for a while that he might be?
Yeah, I guess the old saying is the players sometimes make out the lineup, not the manager. So, you know, if he looks like a guy who's going to be what he was before in St. Louis when he was at his best, it's going to be hard to justify keeping him on the bench a lot. So, if he wants to force his way into the mix, and John Farrell has to get creative finding a way to play this guy, you know, say four times a week, then I think he can do that. You know, at this point, it's hard to see how he plays more than that. Just when you have you have the $22 million committed to Hanley Ramirez in left field. You obviously have Mookie Betts playing center, and you have Shane Victorino, and then you have Poppy at DH. So it's just a matter of, you know, where do you fit, where do you kind of finagle Craig in the lineup? There's also first base with Napoli, but, you know, Napoli's also having a pretty good spring here. So it's going to be tough. I think John Farrell's been pretty candid about the fact that, you know, finding regular or semi-regular bats for Alan Craig is going to be one of the hardest things he has to do. And that's why I'm still not 100% sure that Craig breaks north with this team. You know, there's still a chance he gets traded. And not because they want to trade him, but because the other teams might have a real need for a player like this, for a run producer like this, and the Red Sox might be able to get something for him.
And while I'm scouting the stats, which is just further evidence that I really need to get down to Florida and actually see guys rather than looking at the stat line, I'm sort of intrigued by Dustin Pedroia, who, you know, a year ago had a bit of a rough year, but also was hurt. It was dealing with some physical stuff. but it was sort of easy to kind of say, well, yeah, he's dealing with something, but, you know, he's 31 years old. Maybe he's in decline. The numbers look real good this spring. He's hitting the ball hard, it seems like. You think there's a decent chance for him to look more like the guy that we saw at least in 2012 and 2013, if not the guy from previous years?
Yeah, I'm pretty bullish on Dustin Pedroia because, look, he has, you know, he's had some real bad luck with his hands the last 2-3 years, and they've all been isolated plays where, you know, he got taken out of the slide and landed on his hand, or, you know, the time in New York, which is the one he would really like to have back when he dove headfirst in the first base on opening day in 2013. And just some isolated things that you can see a reason for his decline in production. I don't think the age at 31, you're going to see a real decline with him from an age standpoint, because this guy works probably harder than any athlete I've ever been around. I mean, this guy is just relentless with his strengthening, with his workout, with his winter workouts. He just never stops. And I think what happened last year was he wasn't able to do any weightlifting in the offseason. That's why that was a big reason you saw such a decline in his production. This year he was very excited that he was able to, you know, he's a little guy that people don't know how strong he is, but, you know, this past winter he was able to get back to the weight to do all that stuff that he's been accustomed to doing in his career. So I think there's a pretty good chance that, like you say, at least 2012, 2013, and maybe even back to what he did around 2011.
Another guy who is looking for a bounce-back year and is showing encouraging signs right now is Clay Buchholz. I know we talk about him all the time, but I think it's fair to say that nobody is a bigger variable, that if he's good, if he's what he can be, that's an enormous thing, and if he's what he has been at times, that's a problem. Are you believing what you're seeing from him so far?
Yeah, I mean, Buchholz is one of those guys where he gets on a roll and he stays on a roll for a while, and he needs good momentum like that. And when he's healthy and when he's confident, that's when it all comes together for him. It's when injuries start to creep in and he gets some self-doubt and that kind of thing. To me, he's really taken on, and what's been sort of neat to watch with Buchholz, it seems to me he's really sort of taken on a leadership role and sort of embracing the fact that, hey, he can be the ace of the staff. I mean, he got those guys, those T-shirts that said, you know, I'm the ace that they all wear. And I think that he's just trying to create a mindset on this team. He knows that he has to do more now, because this is a guy whose whole career has been around a John Lester. He's been around a Josh Beckett. He's been around a John Lackey. He's been around kind of these big veteran presence type of guys, and there's none of those guys left. So I think that he is really setting a tone for this team. And, yeah, not to put any pressure on a guy, but he might be the most important player on their whole team. You know, like you said, as far as, like, how his success will kind of impact the overall success of the team this year.
Well, at the other end, I guess, who knows what end of the rotation is what, but Joe Kelly's been dealing with some stuff. How big a concern is his health right now?
Yeah, I think any time a pitcher has a sort of little setback in spring training, you get a little worried. And, you know, he said it's just a bicep thing that he's had before. But, you know, at the same time, he was concerned his first spring training started. He was only throwing about 88 or 89 miles an hour. So to me at the time, that was maybe a little bit of a red flag. Some of his velocity did come back the next time he came out there. But, yeah, because especially when you look at the Red Sox, the way they built this rotation, I mean, these five guys need to stay pretty healthy. They don't have a ton of that's better. They don't have that Chris Capuano type who's ready to step in, you know, if somebody gets hurt. You know, they have a knuckleballer in Steven Wright, and they have some top prospects in Henry Owens and Matt Barnes, but you don't know if those guys are quite ready yet. So they kind of need these five guys to be healthy. So, yeah, that's going to be a concern with Kelly until you see him get back out there and throw the ball the way that they think he can throw it.
A couple of days ago, the Red Sox played the Phillies, and of course that is convenient fodder for anybody who likes to talk trades and who doesn't like to talk trades at any time, especially in spring training. But one of the things that kept coming up was the question of Blake Swihart and whether the Red Sox are essentially saying this guy's not going anywhere, and for some reason nobody who covers ball seems to believe them. What's your take? Are they either now or at a later date? Do you think that the time comes when they part with one or two of the really key guys that it's going to take to get the Phillies to move Hamels, or do you really think they're going to stand firm and say you can have a package of B guys, but you can't have an A guy no matter what?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can even have an A-minus guy. But to me, Mookie Betts and Swihart are the two guys that, you know, they're not going to trade those guys for Cole Hamels. And, maybe they would trade him for Felix Hernandez. But, I don't think they're going to trade him for Cole Hamels. I just think that they think that highly of Swihart and of Betts. Betts is just having a monster spring. But, like you say, you never want to buy too much into spring training numbers. But he just looks like a guy who's sort of ready to really step in and be a contributor. But, yeah, I just think that those are the two guys that they don't want to move. And, I think that the only way they would ever trade Swihart is if, all of a sudden they just thought Christian Vasquez was complete all-star catcher, both offensively and defensively, and he was going to be their starting catcher for the next 10 years. That's the only way I could ever see them trading Swihart.
That's interesting. So am I hearing you right that maybe they view Hamels as kind of a one-and-a-half rather than a real push all the chips in the middle of the table number one starter?
Exactly. I don't think they feel like Cole Hamels is the guy that you put him at the top of your rotation and he says jump on my back, guys. he's kind of just that next tier down from the truly elite pitcher. I just think that's their view of him, and they do like him as a pitcher, but they just don't think that this is a guy they can trade two prospects who they're really excited about, and they'd like to see both of these guys have long careers in a Red Sox uniform.
All right. Well, Ian Brown, thanks for taking some time to talk here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.